Hello, everybody. It's James here. It's not story time. Ask Dutch Anything number 18, maybe? I didn't write that down either. Oh, slacking on this stuff. Anyway, Dutch, you've got a hat you want to tell us about.
It's my new official University of Dutch official lid, I call them, lid. So now I haven't got these. I only got two. This is the first one. And what I'm doing here to kind of on this inaugural edition, I'm going to sell this hat to the highest bidder. So if someone wants to bid on it, dirtydutchmantel@gmail.com, and the mantel's with two L's, and it goes to the highest bidder.
Why don't you put it on eBay? Just put it on eBay and then...
I hate eBay. Okay. I hate it because they're a bunch of ice hoes. No, their fees are too much.
Yeah, they're like 20%.
No kidding. Yeah. I mean, I mean, they had a great idea. It's a group marketplace. That's a great idea. I just don't like their fees. And then whether you sell it or not, you're still going to pay for it. So but I've sold some things over there on eBay. But with as much social media as they have now, you don't need eBay anymore. I mean, according to what you're selling, but if you got any kind of a presence on social media, which I do, by the way, I would just sell it to the people who are in my circle, in my space, as they say. They're in my space. So, hey, do you remember that it was called MySpace?
I never got involved with MySpace because I always thought it was crap.
What did MySpace turn into? Oh, Facebook.
No, it didn't turn into it.
Yes, it did.
No. MySpace existed for years afterwards. And as soon as Facebook came out, Facebook was just infinitely better. So everyone left MySpace. The only people who stayed on MySpace was it would allow you to do like uploads of audio and stuff. So you get like a lot of like wannabe artists posting on MySpace, like Lily Allen or Justin Bieber. I think that's how Justin Bieber was discovered. It was either YouTube or MySpace or something. Yeah,
I think it was YouTube.
Yeah, no, all right. It probably was YouTube. Well, there you go. I've already opened with a false fact. Listen,
let me pull this off because it drives me nuts. Yeah. I can wear it without the head deal, but
well, okay, while you're doing that, then I'll do the rest of the plugs very quickly. We've all got books. I've got two. Dutch has got two behind him. All of them are available on Amazon. Or Dutch's books are available signed for a fee at dirtydutchmantel@gmail.com. Make your request there. He also has diplomas that you can buy with two signatures. The Provost Zab Coulter also makes an appearance on that. We've got a new t-shirt incoming. The design's not ready yet. Please give us 5 stars on iTunes if you could, please. And Shane Douglas Official on YouTube is posting new stuff every single day. That's our weekly episode, not ours, my weekly episode with the franchise Shane Douglas called Franchise University with Shane Douglas. We've got fan questions here. If you want your fan question answered, if you are indeed a fan of this show, why would you be writing in any other reason, I suppose?
Questions. Where are our subscriber totals?
Well, I don't know. We're recording this just after the Friday episode. We've no idea.
Make up something.
400,000.
No, we were at what?
99,000,
like 300.
Yeah, about.
So we're probably a little above that now, but we're still not at 100,000 yet. But if you see anybody that's a wrestling fan, tell them to subscribe to this podcast. They won't be disappointed.
First fan question, and of course, as always, questions for dutch@gmail.com. Write in there, give us your questions, and dozens and dozens and dozens of you do every single week. So if your question doesn't get asked, that's probably why. And the first one who was the lucky boy to be chosen to be our very first fan question asker of the week is Jason from Red Wing, Minnesota. Hello, James and Dutch. I'm a huge fan of the podcast. I look forward to it every Tuesday and Friday. It's the only podcast I listen to on a regular basis. See, this is the kind of thing where if you want to get picked, you put us over. I mean, that does help.
Put us over like we're the second coming or something. Yes.
My question is this. George Gulas had a comment about how Dutch criticized him, and I was wondering what Dutch's reply is to the video that I will send a link to below. Thank you for your time, and I look forward to your reply. Maybe we should watch the video, Dutch. How about that?
Yeah, what, he said something about me?
I'm not sure if it's more generalized, but there's a clip of us, or you specifically, at the beginning of it. Let's find it. Here we go. This actually starts with a clip from our podcast.
George Gulas. The world's not possibly, but definitely the world's worst professional wrestler.
Back talk, chirp. Well, thanks for the compliment. You know, one of the worst wrestlers, whatever. Well, you see that today. He's one of the worst basketball players, yet he's playing. Vern Gagne's son, Greg Gagne, was the second worst wrestler ever wrestled. Why? Because his dad, Vern, pushed him. So I'm not the only one. It's the thing about the father-son relationship. And that's in any sport. It is depressing. Jim Cornette was a mouth about that. You don't know the whole story. And why are you running somebody down? You've run so many people down in the past. See, I heard that his...
Let me just pause that. Why are you running someone down and then he runs Jim Cornette down?
Wife and him would invite another female over and they'd have threesomes. I didn't know that till about 2 or 3 months ago. Julie said, I know that. I heard that. I've heard even wrestlers say that. He'd invite a wrestler over and his wife would share sex with him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but that's their business.
So.
Oh, that is gold. That is too much.
He's really butthurt there, isn't he?
Brother, Blee, not only is he's not interesting at all, and that's the way he talks. So, but he didn't say anything bad about me. He got off on Cornette. So he didn't even say if I was this, that, or the other. He just let that go. But still, the tag still fits. He's still the worst wrestler in the world. This is the first time he's got any exposure at all. And thanks to you, James, you gave him that exposure.
Right. Now he's going to.
Well, you're the one that kind of pulled that email out. So
I've pulled a lot of emails out regarding George Gulas. Yeah. Let's just take something that he said. So in his mind, people are calling him the worst wrestler ever because he was the son of a promoter and he was pushed.
Yes.
That's the reason why he's the worst wrestler ever. Dutch, you've been told.
Yeah, and if his father had not been a promoter, he would anybody would look at George and say, see that door you came in on? I want you back out that door and keep going. Don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out. Just stay away from me. And yeah, that's the only reason. Nepotism. Oh, I'll start my son. He's horrible. And I would never go out and watch one of his matches because first of all, I couldn't stand it. Second of all, he embarrassed me if somebody saw me watching him. And I couldn't take that. So, and I'm not the only one that ever said that. I think everybody that watched this or watched him again on YouTube, because they even got George Gulas matches on YouTube. Mm-hmm. You can go there and you can see for yourself. So tell me, am I wrong? Tell me I'm a lying. Who said that? CM Punk? Tell me if I'm lying. Yep, I'm going to use that term now.
I actually watched quite a lot of George Gulas this morning to prepare myself for this. It was mostly him. Don't ask me why. This was in the comeback. So I think like Nick Gulas shuts up shop in like 79 or something.
Yeah.
Then he reopens a few years later with George Gulas. And oh, it's more George as a commentator announcer. And he's even useless at that. And then someone told me that, funny you mentioned basketball in that clip. Because someone also mentioned that he was a basketball commentator for a local basketball team. And he was shit then as well. He can't do anything.
This is what he used to do. He used to do, we would have a show. And they would have like a basketball team. Like a Rotary Club or Supporters Club. Well, he would go out and he would, you know, Vanderbilt's in Nashville. He got a couple of Vanderbilt players. He paid them. And they went in this little town And oh, they just blew this little local, you know, these guys like 40 years old. They just blew them out and embarrassed them at home. So about, I think toward the end of the season, they said, George, let's do that. Let's do that charity basketball game again. Okay. But this time he just used the wrestlers. They went out and recruited. They did not forget that George embarrassed them in that earlier game. Mm. And they blew out George's team. It was like 80 to like 30. It was, and boy, they were riding George. And George got mad. Finally, just pulled the team off the court, quit. Before the game was over, I heard. Because he'd always want me to play in the back. I wouldn't do it. And he didn't like that. I said, I am not a basketball player. And I'm damn sure not going out with, but hell, I could play basketball better than he could. But I just didn't, I just chose not to do it. I wouldn't do it. So he never liked that, but I don't give a crap.
Also, I want to pull up something. Well, by George Goulas's logic, if there is any there, if he's the worst wrestler in the world, that must mean Greg Garner is the second worst wrestler in the world, which by he's by far nowhere near the worst wrestler in the world. He was fine. No. He just looked stupid for the times. He was nowhere near big enough and he wasn't Vern. But he was a legit athlete and, you know, I think he was like quarterback for a top 10 college football team at the time. So he had some pedigree. Anyway, George Goulas. Oh, also, the other thing that I never don't know if I ever mentioned here. When I interviewed Ricky Morton the first time, I think it was Ricky Morton who said George tried to get Ricky fired from the territory because a girl that George liked Ricky more.
I believe it. Huh? I believe it. He was that way. So that guy was, nobody liked him. The talent, George, his daddy didn't even like him. So it was too much. He was an only child. And I never thought he was Nick's kid anyway. Nick wasn't a tall guy, and George was kind of tall. He's like 6'3" or more. So, and he was just, never mind. Now I'm in a bad mood.
Was Nick a wrestler or just a promoter?
No, he was a promoter. That's all he was.
Oh, we shall move on. I'm happy we started on that one. As I say, the fonts are very small because I forgot to format this properly. Greg, I love your wrestling podcast. It's the only one I listen to. See what I mean? You put us over, you're getting the deal.
Yeah.
Please tell me the story about the Sting / Dick Slater / Dark Journey backstage confrontation. Thanks for everything. Now, I don't know if you're in any territory at the time when this... Mid-South?
I remember the story. I think Dark Journey, I think Slater kind of, I mean, was it Slater?
Dick Slater.
Slater kind of liked her. And Sting apparently said something to her or made an advance toward her. And Slater was a pretty rugged guy. And I think he just went in the back wherever it was. This is a story I heard. And just beat the crap out of Sting. Punched him around and told him he ever said anything to him again, he'd kill him. But that's hyperbole, of course. But it pissed him off. So I don't think Sting messed with that girl anymore.
I think
that was in mid-South, maybe. Yeah. Is that where it happened?
I'd figured that's where it happened.
Did you read the story? Because it's been a long time ago for me, but it was something over her.
Yeah, I think the... Because I barely remember the story. I've not heard it in ages. But I think the situation was Sting may have given Dark Journey a lift to the arena. And she was going out with all his exes with Dick Slater, and he was jealous, and he shoved Sting's head in the toilet.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was something like that. And when I heard it, I went, eh. Because hearing things like that in wrestling, you just go, nah, and you just go on. It's not like Sting has to even answer for it. I doubt if anybody went up to Sting and said, you're okay. or even what happened. I don't think anybody, whatever Steen did, it was like non-offensive to most people, but Slater was, he was a tough guy.
He was not really most people. We shall move on. This might be my favorite question, because I'll be very much interested in your opinion on this. Aaron from New Zealand says, "Hi there, Dutch and James. I was wondering if Dutch has any thoughts regarding Sergeant Slaughter blurring the lines between his wrestling gimmick and real-life experiences. Do you think he's just maintaining a character, or has he really started to believe his own fake military history? There's a few interviews where he is apparently out of character but still claims to have seen battle in Vietnam, even though there are zero records of him ever serving. Thank you so much, and keep up the great work."
Oh, I don't hold that against him. I really don't. It's a gimmick. And he's not like the, what they call the false valor guys. The
stolen valor.
I think. Stolen valor. I just kind of stay away from those guys anyway. I've never really run across one. But that was his gimmick for years. So, and I think most people realize that. But he played it so well. It's like a TV character, basically. So, and what is the guy saying that he's actually trying to portray that in real life?
Yeah. Well, according to the question asker, Aaron, yeah, he is saying that some interviews that he's given where he's apparently talking out of character, but still talking like he had a military past.
Well, he did have a military pass, but
I don't think so.
Nothing.
I don't think so. No, he was never in Vietnam, especially.
No, I didn't say that, but he was never in the military?
I don't think so.
I don't know. I don't really have an answer to that, but he probably got carried away.
Let me just check one sec. Yeah, I've just looked. No military history at all. So, well, I mean, he was Beautiful Bobby, I think, when he first came into the business. And then somehow someone came up with a drill instructor character. And
Sergeant Bobby Slaughter.
Mm-hmm.
Hey. But he did play the role well. He really did.
So I think people are particularly interested because you were in the military. You were in Vietnam, of course. And there are a couple of wrestlers. I think the most famous one that people keep trying trip him up on is Manny Fernandez, who is overly, some have said, have overly stated his involvement in the military, because I think he said he used to be in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And he's given operation names and the years are wrong and stuff like that. And I think there's a website that tries to debunk his claims. I don't know if you've had any talks with Manny about his military past in that sense.
Never did. I wasn't around Manny that much. I was around him in Texas one time, but not for long. I wasn't there long. So, and I never, and maybe a little bit Puerto Rico, and that's it.
We shall move on. Max, not to cause strife between two old buddies and legends of the sport, but recently Mr. Dutch said very quickly on the Kenny Omega MJF match we were talking about in the last episode, Omega has great timing. I listened to Jim Cornette a few days later, and immediately he says that Kenny Omega has zero timing. How do two legends see something so vastly different?
Well, he does have timing. What I'm trying to say is not rushing through things. He does their match, and he takes his time. So he may not meet Cornette's standards. But again, back to my old saying, I'm not the arbiter of that. The fans are, so they respond to him, so he's doing something right. So, and I don't know how Jim can say he has no timing, because he's, I don't know, I wouldn't sit down with Jim, and he has his view, I have mine. So I think one of us is wrong and one of us is right, or one of us is half wrong, one of us is half right. Still, we're going to meet in the middle.
for those who may not fully understand, like me, what timing is? Can you give us a description of what good timing is in a wrestler?
Well, now you put me on the spot. Well, you start a match. To me, I always felt the people out. And the old, you know, you make the your opponent look good at the front. And that is like a comedian testing the audience. You're seeing what they respond to. And then if you've ever seen some guys like Nick Bockwinkel work or Harley Race work, even Dory Funk Jr., they took their time. That's why they could put 40 minutes in and not take a deep breath. They didn't do a hell of a lot. But what they did, after a while, the people get invested in it. So with Omega and MJF, people got invested in that match. And toward the end, they weren't going hell-bent for leather on every move. They were taking their time. And when the finish came, I think it was like a small package or something. A simple finish. And it was 1, 2, 3. And the people popped because they were ready for it. You know, timing is different with everybody. What I have against some of the timing in especially AEW, they go through 55 moves in the first 3 minutes. And then no match. I mean, they could hit a hell of a move on a guy. He's up 2 seconds later, like it didn't even affect him. So if you're not going to sell it, why do it? I mean, some of those moves are so good that it should be finishes. You should end the match with that. But after you've done all that stuff up front, I mean, what's the purpose at the end? I think he has good timing for AEW. And he was working with MJF. MJF don't really – I think he's got pretty good timing too. But I do think Omega was leading the match. So all I can say is I think me and Jim, we just disagree on that one.
What's the definition or difference of definition between pacing and timing? Are they two different things?
It's about the same thing.
Yeah. We sure.
But pacing, you can pace a match, keep yourself from blowing up. But timing really comes into effect at the end, because some things are timed just to happen right then, real quick, out of the blue, boom, it's over. I don't know. That doesn't explain it. I could do it better in a ring, but since we're not in a ring, I'm trying to explain it, which is kind of open-ended, and I know that. But so I don't have an answer. I don't know.
Next,
I can do it, but I can't explain it.
Next question. Larry Harwood says, any truth to the story of Bill Dundee and Macho Man Randy Savage, where a gun was pulled in Memphis and claims Macho Man stole food from a grocery store?
What was this? Macho Man and Bill Dundee?
Yeah. So this is the Bill Dundee gun story.
Oh, that didn't come from stealing from a grocery. I never heard that.
I think that might what be two happened, different stories, wasn't it? Randy Savage just used to shoplift a lot.
Maybe. I don't know. I've heard that too. But I've never had anything to validate that story. What happened with Dundee and Savage? Savage had a rival promotion that he started up in Lexington, Kentucky, and I forgot what they called it. And it was Randy and Lanny and Angelo, they all formed this different company in opposition to Jerry Jarrett and Jerry Lawler's company. And somehow it got back to Savage that Dundee had said something about Randy. So they were both at a European health spa close to Hendersonville, Kentucky. and Dundee worked out there, and Savage, he had actually, he was coming through, he was in Nashville, and he was working out there. So they ran into each other and they had words. So they went out into the parking lot, and I don't know, I think Dundee was coming in and Randy was leaving, one or the other. So they got into it, and I think Randy slapped him or hit him, and they kind of locked up. And then Dundee, he said, screw this. I think maybe Angelo and Lanny may have got involved. I don't think Lanny did, but Angelo may have got involved. And Dundee reached in his car, and he pulled out a gun, and he threatened to shoot all the Poffos. And then I think Randy took off. And that's the story I heard. And I saw Dundee later that day or the next day. He had a cut over his eye. He'd been in a tussle. So, and that was by Randy. And I actually called Randy up. Nobody else would talk to him. I called him up because he kept calling me and wanting me to come and appear on some of his shows. Well, he offered me, you know, decent money, but I was doing it like, if I did it, I would do it more as like a favor. But Lexington, from where I lived, was like 250 miles. Brother, I do somebody a favor, but I'm not riding 4.5 hours up and 4.5 back. And I never would commit to a match with Randy. And I know what he wanted to do. He wanted me to come up there and, you know, us redo our things, our angle from before. I knew that. And if I went up, I would be committed to go more, and I didn't want to. So, but he was trying to make his territory go. Dundee was bad-mouthing him, saying he's going to get him. And when they ran into each other, it's push come to shove, and they had to fight, and he pulled the gun.
Did the gun get fired? Or was it just
waved around? No, the gun did not get fired.
What was the relationship between Randy and Bill like after, is it ICW? I think it was ICW.
Oh, it was ICW, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it was... When he finally came to work for Jerry Jarrett.
Yeah, exactly. Did they get along okay?
Well, they got along okay, but I don't think they worked that much together. I think either by Bill not wanting to or Randy not wanting to, but I don't remember them. And they, now, don't get me wrong, it's been a long time ago. They could have had some matches, but I never knew if once that happened in that parking lot of the gym, I think that was never brought up again. So it was one of those things that happened, but I don't think it had any lingering effects other than a guy pulling a gun on you and threatening to shoot you. Mm. That's all.
Next question, KB. Hi, Dutch and James. I saw a clip of Leilani Kai where she goes off on Vince Russo with some very explicit language because he wanted her to participate in a mud match. Did you cross paths with Leilani at any point? We're not going to play the clip, by the way. There's a lot of swearing, yep. And it's quite long as well. Did you watch it?
Yes, I did watch it. I enjoyed it.
How hard did you laugh through it? She was upset.
She came out of nowhere, didn't she? It was like, she was sitting there like, yeah, man, let's do the interview. And then you brought the name up, Vince Russo. And she got up and she said she hates him. And I went, wait a minute. I mean, that's a little bit of an overreaction. But apparently he came in, this was WWF.
No, WCW.
The old days. Oh, it was WCW?
Yeah.
And she came in just to work with one of the girls and be an enhancement talent. And he came in and told her that he had her booked or scheduled to be in a mud match. Oh, she hit the ceiling, cussed him out, you know, told him he was a piece of crap. I mean, but and it started bad and it ended worse. And I think he finally just walked away. But they were, some of the other people said, oh, you shouldn't have said that to Vince Russo. She said, F Vince Russo, and was screaming it. She never got to the point to whether, I don't think she had the match, did she?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. But, and she thought it was an insult that he would book her and then put her in a mud match. And I can't fault her for that, you know. Now, if it was me, I don't know, I may have had the same reaction, because in mud matches, you don't put accomplished wrestlers in mud matches unless it's a gimmick. You put starting people or people that aren't very good and
ballets.
But she would, yeah, and she was an established talent by that time, and she didn't want to do it, and she made no bones about telling Vince that she wasn't going to do it, and he was a piece of crap.
I'll get to the rest of the question in a minute, but Vince Russo, I've got to say, doesn't have the greatest sort of track record with treating the women who he's writing for with the utmost respect sometimes. Goldilocks, I've been following along with some of the reviews of the early NWA TNA episodes, and Goldilocks, in the first 3 months, I think every single wrestler, babyface or heel, treats Goldilocks like shit. But it's just almost like a recurring theme. But yeah, Vince Russo sure loved his put it, the certain kind of matches that you wouldn't really get away with in 2023, but were quite prominent in the 90s, let's say.
Yeah, I think he had a problem with booking the girls, because that's why the girls were in cages. TNA originally stood for tits and ass. It's what it stood for. So they were going to put the girls in the cages. It's like a strip club wrestling show, you know, and I never quite got it, but, and he was, I think he was there. Was he in WWE when they did the bra, the panties on the pole match and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, that started under Vince Russo's deal in like 98.
See, that's all men stuff. Women don't, they don't care for that. I think you ran your women off when you had that, but they had them anyway. So, yeah, I think he had a fetish somehow with the women wrestlers, and some of the ideas I don't think were very good. So, but I wasn't in charge of that.
The next part of this question, I should say, is: did you ever work with Wendy Richter in Mid-South or Puerto Rico?
Wendy Richter. I think I did. I think I worked with Wendy. She's a nice girl. Nice girl. And I worked with another one that finally went to WWE. I forgot her name. I can't remember her name now. But Wendy, I do remember meeting her before she went. Nice girl.
We shall move on. Travis, hi James, not Dutch. Love the podcast. Kudos to how you facilitate. Top shelf. Long time fan here. I have a question for Dutch. Number one, thank you very much, Travis, by the way. With Starrcade 1986 often being called the best of anything Jim Crockett Promotions ever produced, I am curious to hear from Dutch his thoughts on the build-up and what it was like that night. It was an incredible show and would love to hear his thoughts on the Night of the Skywalkers. So I was actually watching this in the gym early today, and I was watching your match, in fact.
Who was I against?
You and Jaggers versus Crusher Khrushchev and Ivan.
Oh, yeah. In the Omni?
In the Omni.
Oh, it was a good match. Great house. It's fun to work there. Ivan Kolov, God rest him. And Khrushchev, great talent. They had they had internal heat with the people. I mean, built-in heat. They were Russians. So this is when we had the big, you know, rivalry with the Russians, and they were easy to hate. So we had this, and we always had good matches with them. The atmosphere in the dressing room was good. And the Skywalkers, was that where Cornette broke his leg?
It's where he did, but he blew both his knees out, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm standing there watching. Cornette hates heights almost as bad as I do. But when they got him up there on the scaffold, it was the crowd like, oh, God, now he's up there, because they chased him up there. And once they got him up there, now he's looking one way, and there was somebody there that didn't like him. And he looked the other way, and there's somebody there that, oh, God. And then he looked down. That's timing. You take your time to let them respond to that. Then all of a sudden, turn your head slowly and look over there. Then you look down. Now everybody can read your mind. Now he's trying to get off. And who was supposed to catch him? The
Big Bubba Rogers, Ray Traylor. Yeah.
And missed him. But I'm saying Jimmy probably weighed 220, 230, maybe. I mean, he may not have been that heavy. But catching 220 pounds, I don't care how big you are. You know, Big Bubba only weighed a little over 300. So it's like almost catching your own weight. But I don't know if he even tried to catch Jimmy.
No.
I think he said, whoop, I'll get out of the way. And he went down and he blew both knees out.
Yep.
I only thought he blew one out. But I actually felt sorry for him. Jimmy is not the most athletic person in the world, and gravity favors no one. And he went down like a brick and landed like a brick. And, you know, it had to hurt like hell. So
should we watch it? Why not?
Yeah, let's watch it.
Okay, one sec. Okay, here we go. I don't know where the volume is here.
Oh, my God. That's a double walkway.
I like that. I like the golden loafers look.
Oh, yeah. He's
that's
up.
High as well. That's got to be 18 feet above the ring.
Now you're looking down. Oh, God. Oh, God.
What's Animal doing to him?
Laying down beside him.
Yeah.
Then how you doing? I think he's helping him off.
Yeah, he's hooking him.
No, he's hooking him off. Look. Oh, God. That's a long drop. Oh, my God. Look. You can see his. Oh. Back that up a little bit. Where is Bubba?
He's almost as far away as Animal is to Jim Cornette. Look at this. I'll try and pause it the best bit.
He wasn't even there. Oh. Oh, it blew his knees out.
Yeah.
That hurt me when I saw it.
I don't know if you can hear it on this one, but like Jimmy's got a high voice anyway. But
look at the referee.
Going...
The referee, Tommy Young. He even turned his head. Tommy Young's a referee. That's a long drop.
Yeah. My right knee. Maybe it is just one knee. Maybe I'm talking about. Listen to him.
Oh, he's hurting.
Tumbled all the way over the scaffold.
He's hearing a.
Hey, brother. Like you know what? If I'd have took that drop, you know what I would have done?
Quit.
I would have done an Andy Kaufman. I said, you got to bring the gurney out for me. I said, put me on a gurney, put me on a something, and cart me out of here because I wouldn't take the chance of even walking to the back or trying to walk to the back because you don't know what condition that knee's in. So I would have done an Andy Kaufman and just laid there.
You can tell he's almost in shock, can't you? Because like that'd be the normal reaction. Because he sort of almost hurt. He gets up quite quickly in that sense. So he's almost in shock rather than selling the injury.
That's a hell of a drop. That's a drop from his hands to the floors, probably 20 feet. And if you don't think that's a long drop, try it. Just go out there and get on top of a basketball, you know, the backboard of a basketball net and just jump off.
Now, we've got time for a few. I'm not going to do that. Rusty Flowers says, my question is this. I'm a huge old school wrestling fan, especially CWA wrestling from Memphis. My question is this. When Jerry Lawler won the AWA Unified title or Memphis, whatever, he carried the AWA belt and then everybody else carried a different kind of belt. Do you remember why? Or if this even happened?
Brother, those belts, they confused me there. They really did. He got the AWA belt, I guess. A guy carrying a belt didn't mean anything to me. It was just stuck. He was another place just saw fit to put their title on him. But the one that meant something in Memphis was the – which one did I beat Lawler for, the AWA belt?
No, you were on the Unified.
Oh, the Unified, yeah. The Unified title. But I couldn't keep them straight. I didn't know which one, whatever the one Lawler had, meant more than anything else. Because that's the one they tried to, when you won that one, you know you could have matches with other guys in the territory. The other one was just for Bockwinkle, really, the AWA one. And Bockwinkle would come in and try to get it back, and he would go up there and, you know, he would defend it or try to get it or, but the one that meant something was a universal belt in Memphis, unified one.
Darren, dear Dutch, how do you feel about today's wrestlers not respecting the ring by wiping their feet before they go in? Thank you.
Bobby tells me the floor is cleaner. Guys wipe their feet really because the floor was dirty or guess what? They could have been on a dirt floor, which is a many cases, I'm sure, back in the day when you could just set a ring up in a cow pasture, fill, and charge tickets. So did I ever wipe my feet when I went in? No, but I didn't take it as a sign of disrespect. If I had come in off a dirt floor, yeah, I would have wiped my feet. But I didn't. But then what if you go out, you get thrown out of the ring during that match? When you get back in, do you wipe your feet again to clear it off? No, you just get back in. I don't know. But I never wiped my feet when I went in. Not a sign of disrespect. But it is a sign that it's an old school guy there. That is what it's a sign of.
JJ, I just saw the episode of Memphis Wrestling where T.L. Hart made his debut. He's even given the date, 16th of February, 1985. I think Jimmy Hart went to the WWF at this point. Was this another piece of Lawler's revenge replacing Jimmy with T.L. Hart, which was an obvious as day unneeded fake, and having him say the line, "What do you do with a horse when it breaks its leg? Why it shoots it?" Was that forced, or did T.L. Hart have the wit to use that on his own? So I don't know anything about this. The Jimmy Hart replacement.
I don't remember it either. But if it happened, which I'm sure. What's this guy's name?
JJ.
JJ, if it happened, which I'm sure it did, just why would you write a fictitious question in? But you could write that too, because, you know, I don't know everything that went on. But I think he was told to say that line as a direct shot at Jimmy Hart. Who went to WWE? How long was it before Jimmy Hart, Jerry Lawler went to WWF after Hart left?
About 7 years.
That long?
Yeah. Jerry debuted as a commentator, in fact, late 92. So this was the beginning of 85.
Well, Lawler for years and years and years said he would never, never. Now, doesn't never mean at no time in the future? And it means like it's timeless, right? Never means never.
Infinity.
Right. But Lawler didn't mean it that way. He just says, well, till I milk this cow dry, and I don't blame him, till I milk this cow dry in Memphis, until I need some more milk, when I decide to go to the WWF, which he did. He milked it dry, and he made a lot of money in Memphis because he owned the town, basically. When you take, if you really look at Lawler's opportunities in Memphis, he had his local TV. He was on every week. He was an established local star. No telling how much money he made on local commercials, local appearances.
How upset was Jerry Lawler when Jimmy left? I don't remember if you don't know if you remember the sort of overall feeling of losing Jimmy from the territory at that time.
Hey, when they lost Jimmy, hey, close the doors. Because Jimmy was as much a part of that program as Lawler was. Lawler could miss a TV. Jimmy never missed one. But Jimmy told me that he was making no money at all. So you couldn't blame him for going to WWE. And I think that Jerry Jarrett and his, he didn't want Jimmy to leave, of course, but he couldn't pay him enough. He couldn't make the trips and maintain and pay his bills by what they were paying him then. So, and I think Lawler even realized this. And while they was, might have been a not, I don't think bad feelings, but I think Lawler and Jerry Jarrett both were disappointed because that meant that, well, it's, that was like one of the dropping of the guard is when that happened. And it just reminded both of them that what's eventually going to come is because they're going to be run out of business. They can't afford to stay in business and keep a crew and pay a crew and pay all their bills, maintaining to keep that business going. They just couldn't do it.
Did Jerry hold it against Jimmy for a while after leaving?
I don't know if he held it against him, but I think he realized that. I think that Vince always wanted Jimmy anyway. And I think Jimmy was maybe instrumental, I'm not sure about this, of getting Lawler in there because he was the lifeline, not the lifeline, but a direct source to Jerry. So Jerry went 7 years later, and nobody could take his place. They tried, and by that time I had already gone, so I'm just hearing bits and pieces from there. But it was sad to see what Memphis became. Because I've seen slow houses in Memphis, but not like toward the end. They was maybe 1,000 people there, maybe. 1,000 people for some places it would be good. But there, it looked totally, you could have, the old saying is you could have shot off a shotgun in a place and not hit anybody. That's how dispersed they were.
Next fella, Rob on the night shift, UK. Hi, Dutch and James. Would love to hear Dutch explain how a match is called in the ring and how many moves ahead that you call. And what do you do if it all goes tits up? Many thanks.
Well, you just pick up where you just try to cover it up as best you can. Or You just act like, well, hell, I intended that to happen. So, I mean, you just keep going, you know, it's supposed to be a tussle anyway. So if you miss something, you just miss it. But I tell you how good some of the guys became, and I'm going to include myself in there too. You work with these guys so much, you don't need to call nothing. You kind of know it anyway.
When you were first starting out, how many spots did you call in advance in the back?
Just to finish.
Really?
Yep. You worked it all out. That's how I learned. I think that's probably the best way to learn. But WWE won't let you learn that way. They don't want you to learn that way. See, when guys used to get talent in the old WWF, the old one, I mean, they brought an array of different styles to WWF. Now you just see the WWE style. That's all you see. But see, you had guys, I could, years ago, I could watch a guy walk to the ring and his first couple of moves and tell you where he'd come from. Because the styles were that distinct and they were similar but different. You could tell if a guy had worked in Charlotte or whether he'd worked in Texas or in Florida or in Tennessee.
Right, okay, one more question, and we're going to go with Sheila. Hello, James and Dutch. I'm from Daytona, born in Anderson, South Carolina. I remember Andre the Giant versus Five Midgets, and also Mighty Igor once gave me a smoked sausage. Hoping you remember and elaborate.
Wait a minute. A what?
I don't know if this is a euphemism
or
not.
Smoked sausage? What the hell? What were you doing, Sheila?
I don't know if this was in the arena, in the back, or whatever, but hoping you would remember and elaborate. We the people keep up the good work from a fan of 50 years. So, two things. Do you remember Mighty Eagle giving you a smoked sausage?
No, I don't remember that. So,
you weren't as tight then?
No, he gave you a smoked sausage. Well, I don't remember that. I don't remember. I just met him a couple of times. He always worked up north. I always work down south. Okay, and the next one is Andre the Giant versus Five Midgets.
Yes.
I would like to see that. That would be a what they call a gimmick match. I don't even know how they'd work that, but and how they would.
They'd all be on top of each other's shoulders with a big long coat.
But I would like to actually see that match. But that match would be very dangerous, I would think, because Andre was not the most nimble person in the world. And if he fell on one of those little midgets, and by the way, we don't use the term midgets anymore. We use the term vertically challenged. So if he fell on one of those vertically challenged individuals, midgets, yeah, he could hurt them. But I would be interested in seeing the match just as a gimmick match.
What is the weirdest, I mean, probably stick with Andre if you've got one, but what's like the weirdest gimmick match back in the day that they just don't do now anymore?
Let me see. The matches they don't do. I'd have to think about that, because I'd have to think of some weird damn gimmick matches they had. I can't think of any right now. But let me think about it. Ask me next week.
Okay, then. We're going to leave it there. It was sort of devolved into a bit of a debacle the last like 12 or so minutes then for reasons that we had several interruptions for several different reasons there. So I'll leave it at that and hope it'll become more obvious in a few weeks, because we actually had a guest come in and then leave again just to sort of check the deal. But for now, thank you very much for watching. We answer your questions, or do our best to answer your questions, or Dutch does, every single week, every single Tuesday. And questions for Dutch at gmail.com. All I'm seeing in my other screen here is a giant University of Dutch cap logo in my face. That means that Dutch has got a University of Dutch cap for sale, or at least that is coming
for
soon.
Auction.
For auction.
Yeah. This one's for auction.
Yeah. So that one, Dutch is going to sign.
And with two signatures, Dirty Dutch and Zeb Coulter. And it goes to the highest bidder. Just email me. DirtyDutchMantel@gmail.com and make a bid. So, and we'll see.
Yeah, you should do it on Twitter as well. Just say email here for this hat signed.
And... I will do it on Twitter and Instagram.
There you go. In fact, take a photo of it signed as well, saying, hey, do you want this very first hat ever made of University of Dutch? Here it is signed. Bring in your best bids. You should do that.
Do it.
Oh, I can't. Are we going? No, we're not. But we can be. We the people.
We the people. See ya.
See ya.